just afraid to change.
Change.
We need to change things up.
It's a show about change.
Welcome to Bob's Basement. Here's your host, Bob Ouellette.
And joining me virtually in the basement, a longtime friend and a colleague, one of the true good guys in the industry, Jim Lang. Jim, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Thanks, Bob. It's a pleasure. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. We've been we've worked together way back in the early 2000s at Mojo yes. Radio was the first time yes. we had worked together. I want to get to that. But I was saying thanks to the internet and social media, you always feel like you kind of know what's going on with people and what brought you. I always found your story really fascinating. We're going to talk about your history as a military brat, and because this is a show about change.
Yes.
You're just celebrating an anniversary. I'd like to start by saying congratulations. Is it the 9th anniversary? Have you been there since the very beginning of the region?
That's right. Yeah, December 11, 2013, we launched as an independent, brand new radio station from scratch. So we just celebrated 9 years, and now we have people like Kevin Frankish and Ann Romer and Sunil Joshi.
Wow.
That are all part of the
Toronto
team.
Legendary names.
Yeah, and Rob Pagetto, who used to be in YTV.
Yep.
And it's been fantastic. And I remember when I was offered the opportunity, it was like the time of my life, it was kind of perfect. And it was like, you know, it's like back to roots, back to the beginning of my
yeah.
broadcasting career. And it's, you know, it's never a smooth, like straight line on.
Nothing's linear.
Yeah. It's up and down, but it's ever upwards from the beginning
yeah.
and we're still there and it's great people. And I love it. And we kind of coincided at the right time with the benefit of technology. Because you don't need a huge staff to run a radio station anymore.
No.
You need some good engineers and good software people and good equipment. And back in the day, what you would need, say, 30 people for a station, you can do with half of that. But that's the fact.
Yeah.
And that's because of the technology and different things that you can utilize. And then the fact that most of the people that work for us, we've all done different things. TV, radio,
yeah.
Podcasts, writing. We're all multi-talented because we've had to learn to pick up skills along the way in our career. So we can do different things without a lot of handholding.
Yeah, I mean, it's the virtue of, necessity is the mother of all yes. invention, right? I mean,
yeah.
We have to learn everything in this business because if you only know one thing, you're probably not, you're probably a dinosaur. You're probably out there. You might still have a job. I know a few people who still only do one thing for one station, but that is the rarity for sure.
Right now in Canadian broadcasting, I'd say that's like half of 1%, to be
fair,
honest with
fair
you.
Fair enough, yeah.
Even some of the biggest names in the business are tasked with doing radio and social media as part of their contract for their TV or vice versa. You're owned by a company that has multiple platforms.
Yeah.
And you're paid X, but they want you to do A, B, and C for your payment, which is very, very typical. And if you say no, they're like, okay, well, there's someone there that will do it.
It's funny.
And that's, I mean, look at that's if that is just the reality of business and broadcasting in 2022.
Well, I have gotten into the odd flame war here and there with some of our former broadcasting friends, meaning that they're former broadcasters, not former friends. But
yes.
I've gotten into some conversations with some guys who aren't in the business anymore. They're retired or they've moved on. And
yes.
They don't understand that, what you just said, that whole thing you just said about social media and making videos and doing all that is part of what it entails to be on the radio nowadays. Whether you like it or not, we can't be just a one platform place. We have to be multi-platform.
It's funny how things all sort of intersect over the years in your broadcast career, Bob. This is my iPhone, and
yep.
every day after I start my show and I get established, I do an Instagram
yeah.
video.
Yeah.
And we put it on the story.
Yeah.
And it's about 30 to 35 seconds. You know, this is today.
Yeah.
We're doing our holiday cash giveaway. We're doing a charity event with South Lake. These three things. Oh, by the way, it's Taylor Swift's birthday. And we posted on our Instagram story. And for a lot of people, once upon a time, people would tune into Canada AM when they got up to see what was going on in their day.
Yep.
But most people don't have that time.
No.
So while they're going to the bathroom, that 35, 40 second video
yep.
lets them know it's going to snow later today. we've got a charity event happening and you could win some money. And, you know, so-and-so the Leafs won and beat the Ducks. So they have the Coles Notes version. Yeah. And that is, let's face it, they call it the 140 character attention span. And I know in television, they would want your stand-up to the end of a story. So if you're at Leaf practice or you're at a,
right.
at a sporting event, they want it around 30 seconds, give or take, because they know that if you keep going on and on, the longer you go, the attention span does this. So you need to be able to look, do 25, 30 seconds with just a couple of short form notes and bullet points and then look engaged. And so if you can do it in the camera, you can do it in the phone. And then that's a selling point. And it doesn't cost the station any money. It's a marketing tool and it's selling your show and selling your brand. And it, to me, it's, I mean, that's part of the reason that no matter what your shift is, you have to come in ready. Hey, you're going to be on camera on your phone,
yep.
whether you like it or not. So spend a little time, wake up a little earlier, look presentable, and think about what you're going to say, because that's as important as what you do on the air.
I mean, I could go down this hole for hours, because I think that what you are preaching to the choir here by far. It's just absolutely, it's a 360 deal now. You're not just on the air. It's not just a shift. It's, you know, it's a show. All those stereotypes yeah. that we hear. But you brought up TV. I want to go back, because again, this is the podcast about change. I was going to start off with your life as a kid and how you dealt with change, because you moved around a lot, and I do want to get that, but
yes.
seeing as we're here right now, I have a theory that I think radio people are better at TV than TV people are better at radio. Would you agree with that?
Bob, I 100%
yeah.
agree.
Yeah.
And most of the top people I work with over the years in TV all started in radio.
Yeah.
As the foundation.
Right.
And I'll tell you how it paid off. For the most part, when you're doing network television, TV sports,
yeah.
you're dealing with a teleprompter with information that you or producer have worked on a script. Hey, I remember one night we were going to a story about Kobe Bryant and the Lakers going into the playoffs. And we had a reporter who was in LA doing a story at the Staples Center just opened, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when you have an earpiece in,
yep.
so you're being counted by your producer and your director's talking to you, and you have a thing called an AP, and they're counting you because you have to stop talking at a time to start the story for network time. And so I'm looking at the screen, the teleprompter crashes. So they have to do a reboot. Well, the reboot takes about 2 minutes. So now as a radio broadcaster, I've written it before. I kind of know what I said. They say, Jim, you have 27 seconds. And so they're counting me and I hit it. And they're like, oh my God, well, that's where all those years of radio and sometimes you have to fill. And unfortunately, I work with some people in TV who were TV only. And without that information, it wouldn't have been the same. But the people I work with who had that foundation from radio, who had to work on the fly and, you know, improvise and do all that stuff while you're in the middle of the show, things like that weren't a hardship. And so, yeah, I'm a big believer in that radio if you're going to TV, because the technology is great, but it doesn't always work.
No, exactly.
There's a technical problem. There's a satellite problem. There's a problem with the computer. And they're telling you, Bob, Jim, whomever, you need to fill for 30, 60, whatever seconds until we fix it.
Yep.
So that's your job.
You better figure it out.
Yeah. At the end of the day, when you, especially in TV, I find you're being paid for what you do when things are going wrong, not when things are going right. When things are going right, you've got a much bigger support staff than radio. You've got this. They're taking care of everything. You just have to, you know, hit the mark, be clear, your elocution, make sure you're talking and, you know, throw to the story. But when everything starts going wrong and things are breaking down, you're still alive. You still have a show to do. That's where you earn your money. That's where you earn your keep.
Let's talk about 20, 21 years ago, I think is when you and I would have first worked together
yes.
at Mojo, when Mojo Radio launched. And you were at that time. So Remind me, because we worked together, but we weren't in the same building. You were in like a little phone booth somewhere, yeah. Right? Like that was the story. You guys were up in on Don Mills or no?
Agent Court.
Agent Court. You're at CFTO.
It's got online court.
Yes, at CFTO there. So when Mojo Radio launched, the terrific idea. Very poorly yes. executed. I've talked about it many times. I've talked about yes. it with Toronto Mike. I think it was a great idea. But it was the execution was off to say the least.
Yes.
I really liked the idea. It didn't work. But in doing so, got to meet some really great people. You being one of them. However, I think it might have been till a Christmas party before we actually met, because you were the deal was this is. Who owned? Were you with Sportsnet? But it wasn't Rogers. It was CTV, wasn't it?
Okay. Well, this is where things get interesting.
Okay.
So I was the sports director at Talk 640.
Oh, you were? Oh, yes. I didn't know that. Were you there? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So I was working with Marsha Lederman.
Okay.
And Evelyn Macko, and we were Talk 640, and I was the sports director, and I did morning sports at Q.
Okay.
And I did work in the Argos radio broadcast and other things. And then I was called into a meeting, and I had to sign an NDA.
Right.
And said, we're switching formats. And I got good news and bad news. The good news is you have a job. The bad news, it's not here. and so then my job and contract was transitioned to Scott Moore and what was CTV Sportsnet at the beginning.
Oh.
So just after it started to become CTV Sportsnet, the CRTC had a ruling that CTV could not own TSN and Sportsnet at the same time.
Yes, yes.
So they kept TSN and we were in trust. So we were in trust for about 6 or 7 months.
Wow.
So we technically didn't have a corporate boss for about 7 months. And we were in our building was an overflow, almost studio warehouse building separate from Channel 9 Court, the main building.
Right.
So TSN and CTV SIFTO were in the main building, and you walked about 200 meters and there was a separate building.
Yeah.
And we were like the black sheep.
Yes. Yeah. In the little corner there, like the little rented studio, but you were like kind of the competition, but not, you were eventually going to be the competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
We were in trust. Rogers bought us, and then they didn't know what to do with us because they owned us, but they didn't know what to do with us.
Right.
So we were in that building for a number of years, and they said, we should probably all be in the same building. And then we finally moved to the building, called
Jarvis.
Rogers campus. Yeah.
Jarvis and Bloor, call it the Death Star, some people.
So we finally moved into there. But then at the beginning, so I went from being the sports director at 640 to being the lead at Sportsnet Radio.
Right.
And then I had to hire a staff, and then we had the technology to flip and go from, okay, I'm doing sports at 640, I'm doing sports at NY, I'm doing sports at CHPL in London,
right.
CHML in Hamilton. So there's about 6 or 7 stations that we could flip over to and do sports. So that went on for a few months.
Imagine that change. Imagine how many engineers had to be involved to put all that in place. And now there's like, it just takes nothing. Like, it's just like, you can be on the air. We could be on the air anywhere right now. Talk about change.
I think about the labor intensive work it took to shoot a story, edit a story, and put a story on TV.
Yeah.
In that 2001, 2002, 2003, when I first started at Sportsnet, to now, I could shoot it on an iPhone, upload it, and then you can edit it and put it to air, and the quality, and when they put the Chiron, it's not that, it's unbelievable.
No, it's amazing. Look at our friend Jeff Merrick, who does the radio show at 590 now. He does it from his home, right? Like, I mean, he does the podcast, he goes in for the podcast for the 32 Thoughts, and then I think he goes in on Saturday nights for that one break with Ron. But otherwise, he's doing an entire radio show from set. Look, I run two radio stations in Kingston from my basement in on the Danforth.
But Bob, that's the business now. I mean, we're seeing CNN reporters, BBC reporters, mm-hmm. reporting on world events from Newcastle, England, or Ypsilanti, Michigan, or wherever. Because as long as they have good Wi-Fi, a good internet connection, and it looks good, to be honest with you, a lot of people are consuming their news on their phone.
Sure, they are.
And I've got two kids at university, and they'll say, Dad, did you see on, they'll name the social media platform, there's a story about so-and-so did this. And the days of sitting around the TV watching 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock news are pretty much dead.
Yep.
So, you know, and whether we like it or not, Bob, here's when you talk about change. It's all dollars and cents.
Yep.
So if it's cheaper and more cost effective to have a reporter from their home do the same work, upload it, send it, and have less people, less overhead, well, then... Well, of course they're going to do it.
And and right? Of course, and the other thing, and the pandemic just accelerated it, right?
Yeah,
it just, it just, maybe this would have been a 10-year process that was done in like 20 months, not even. We were so used to immediate seeing people within their backgrounds, was their house.
Yeah.
And it was, and it's amazing how fast. Yeah, exactly. Your dog's barking in the background, all that stuff. Yeah. We became so accustomed to it so fast. We, you know, it's very Marshall McLuhan, right? Like, you know, the medium is the message. It is very much, we changed with it. And obviously some of the stories changed obviously as well, but you're right. That world that you and I first met in seems so foreign now. You couldn't imagine doing radio the way we did radio then.
No. I mean, so at the time I was doing the Sportsnet radio.
Yes.
And doing Mojo and all that. And then what happened was they used to do the morning show live at Sportsnet, Sportsnet AM. So if you were the
host.
Was
that like Mike Toth?
No, he did the late show.
Okay, he was the late show. Sorry.
So he did the late show. The morning show was a guy named Damien Goddard.
I know Damien. I know that name. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So you would have to be there for 4 a.m.
Sure.
You were on the air at 6 live on TV. And Damien was going away on a family vacation for 3 weeks, and they needed someone to fill in. And here's the problem. All the late night hosts went to management and said, I'm not doing it, because they had filled in. And their body clocks were all,
oh, it's the worst. It's so hard.
Go out like, so they were on that like 6 p.m. to 2, 3 a.m. body clock, and they couldn't do it. And then they knew I was there every morning.
So was that your first TV gig?
No, I had done some OUA football and hockey on CHTV.
Right.
So then they said, they're going to have me do a screen test. I did a screen test. I said, Jim, you're going to fill in for Damien when he's off.
Anchor.
And because physically I was used to the hours.
Yeah.
So Bruce Barker, a mutual friend, filled in for me in the morning.
Right. I remember that.
And then the rest of the shifts were all taken care of, but I would do TV. So I became, for a while there, when I wasn't doing radio, I was filling
in
on the Sportsnet morning show when they needed a live host because of the hours were so crazy.
That's how that all went down. And I remember Barks doing sports with us on the Humble and Fred show.
Yes.
And all this, when I'm saying Mojo Radio, obviously I was the technical producer of the Humble and Fred show, and I'd have a talk back to that little booth in the little black sheep corner that you talk about up in Agent Court. Okay, so you had done some TV at that point. I wanted to stop. I asked you a personal question. Sure. When you were at 640, was Dave Trafford there?
Yes. So he was Dave Trafford was the news director.
Okay, yeah.
Pat Cardinal was the program director of Q and 640.
Yes.
Marsha Liederman did the afternoons and did other magazine shows and radio documentary work. Evelyn Macko was the morning news queen.
Right.
The Generalissimo, as I call her.
Yes, of course.
And I did morning sports. And then I did a split shift. So I did morning sports, then afternoon sports. And then, but eventually... Stuart Myers became
that's when Chorus bought Wick.
Yes, and he said, look, Jim, this is crazy. We just want you to do the morning and that's it. I go, you sure?
Are you sure? Are you going to pay me for both?
Okay. And, and so you're not used to getting, you know, that kind of.
No, of course. I don't know.
Send it to you. And I just figured, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. So that's what happened. Yeah. So then I ended up But then it was shortly thereafter he called me in the office and had that meeting. And and they said, you got good news and bad news. A, you have a job, but B, it's not here.
Yeah. And it was Stu Myers that gave you that note.
Yeah,
funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's a small little weird piece of how this, what a tiny world we live in. I just want, we're Humble and Fred Show post Mojo Radio. We're at Standard Radio at 2 St. Clair.
Yes.
And we're at 99, Mix 99.9, where 1010 CFRB is. And, you know, Humble Howard always had a great, you know, News Talk 1010 CFRB was the adult table. We were the kids table. Like, we did, Taylor Parnaby's over there, like Wallace and all these guys, and Dave Trafford. And one day I get a knock at my door of the Humble and Fred office, and it's Dave Trafford. And he's like, I have a picture of you on my mantle. I'm like, what are you talking about? My wife, Laura, her little sister is married to Dave Trafford's son.
What?
Yes. Yeah. I go to the Traffords are like family to me now. What a small world.
I know Dave does a lot of choir work.
Yes, he does. Yes.
And he does a lot of really serious work with the choir.
Yeah. He's written a couple musicals actually, but
Great guy, really real professional, real veteran.
Yeah. He's also out of traditional broadcast now, entirely in the podcast space now.
I think what Dave's doing, what other people are doing, what Humble and Fred have done, Bob.
Yep.
They embrace the change and go, okay, this is what the industry, this is what the world's giving me. But then I have the technology.
Yep.
And it doesn't take a lot. I don't have a 34-track mixing board to do it.
You do not need that at all. No.
You know, I mean, you used to see home studios and like, this looks like where they recorded Deep Purple's, you know.
What was the studio at Young and St. Clair or Young and Norton? Wasn't there the big studio that Gary Whitten used to work out of?
That's right. It was a full 48-track mixing board. Yeah, and they actually, I was an assistant producer back in the fall of 92, and John Derringer and Steve Warden did the album launch for Fully Completely for the Tragically Hip, and they were in that studio. And it was being broadcast across Canada on the WIC radio network.
What was it called? Oh, my buddy Doug Elliott, who, I don't know if you know Doug.
Yes.
Yeah, Doug hired me at 94.9 The Rock. That's how, and you know him through, and you know Craig Venn too.
That makes you Westworld One.
That's it. Yeah.
But that doesn't, you just, as long as you have a decent laptop and the right program, you're on the air.
During the pandemic, I actually downloaded like this one program and I was DJing on Twitch because I was bored because I was like, whoever wanted to watch.
Well, I mean, for physical and mental health, I work out probably 5 or 6 days a week. I mean, not crazy, but I work out.
Do something.
And we're social media. People have these Instagram fitness accounts and YouTube channels.
Yep.
And why would I need to hire a trainer? If I don't know how to do something, I just go to YouTube and I go, oh, okay.
Okay, that's how I do it.
I mean, I love YouTube for stuff like that. I mean, I know my wife she's really handy and she basically keeps the house upright.
Right.
And if she doesn't know how to do something, she'll go to a YouTube channel and then, you know, she's fixing a wall or
it's
doing
great.
Something.
Yeah.
And that's because before, if you didn't know, someone didn't tell you, how would you know?
Well, you'd have to pick up your Yellow Pages and call somebody to do it.
So that's just where, you know, and part of it for me is, and you talked about me growing up, I mean, I moved around so much growing up, but all my friends did. We were all Air Force brats.
So this is what I wanted to get to before I wanted to talk about it, like, because you talk about it with such pride and rightfully so that your dad was a member of the military and you grew up in a military family. And I think about, I literally have only lived within about a 7-kilometer radius of where I grew up. So I have a certain life experience and you have the absolute opposite of that. Let's talk about how you dealt with that. You just alluded to it. You had friends that moved around too, but like how many places did you live when you were a kid?
Okay, that's a good question. Okay, so I was, were living in Belgium.
Where were you born?
I was born in Marville, France.
Wow.
A U.S. Army base in Marville, France, near Verdun. And then we went from Belgium to Germany, and then we went from Germany to Trenton. And then we were there about 10 years and we went from Trenton to Burbank, California.
Wow.
Because the Canadian military just bought a plane that was being built there. Went from there to Greenwood, Nova Scotia. Went from there to Camp Borden.
That's crazy. And then I went
to Humber College. So I got to Humber College. Now, growing up, half the base was moving out. Half the base was moving in.
Right.
So when you started school and you met someone you didn't know, he'd say, hey, Bob, where'd you move from?
Right.
That was the first thing. And where'd your dad get transferred from? That was the first thing you said. Yeah. And I was meeting people.
Yeah.
And I'd say, oh, where'd you guys move from? Move. I lived in the same house my whole life.
Yeah.
Where'd your dad get transferred from? He's worked in the same job. Like, I had never met people like that.
Right.
College.
Right. And that was the era where like my grandfather worked at Canada Metal lead smelting factory for 40 years, whether it was good for him or not, he did. But you're flitting around the world. Did you appreciate it? Did you hate it? Or was it all you knew and you can't really compare?
I mean, I didn't really, that's, we all had the same experience.
Yeah.
That's what we all live through. And some bases are better than others. And some experiences are different than others. But I mean, looking back, I'm very, very grateful It's really helped me, especially in later life, because I mean, we would like, well, we're moving. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Your dad we're going
being transferred. You're moving from like one province, one country, whatever. It's, so you just, you do it. And then especially in Canadian media, sometimes there's change. Sometimes you move. Sometimes you move provinces. Sometimes you move companies.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, so this is what my reality is now. Now I'm going to deal with it. And that's a skill that I really learned as a young age.
Yeah. You have you done? I want to get, you mentioned about media moving around, but when you were a kid, did moving around, did that kind of temper any kind of materialism that you might have had? Because you know you just can't bring stuff with you.
As a matter of fact, it's funny you say that. We had a weight limit, so the Canadian military, so a moving truck,
yeah,
they would put like three or four families in one truck, and they had colored stickers. So the Ouellette family was red and the Lang family would be green.
Wow.
And we had some boxes that had four and five different stickers on it because the boxes, we just never unpacked them.
Yeah.
And they would just slap a different sticker on. So, yeah, you had a weight limit and like how much stuff
yeah.
you could bring with you from base to base. So, that's a very good point. I live a life with not a lot of stuff, a lot of little things because they're easy to travel with yeah. and move with, but not like big things, no.
When you end up at Humber, did you go to Humber yes. for broadcast? So you're like 18, 19?
Right. I was just turning 19.
Yeah.
Stan Lark was the head of the program. Don Landry was in the year before me.
Wow.
And Maura Chisholm, who ended up in the Radio Hall of Fame for Humber, she ended up left our program and was a longtime station manager, sales manager in Radio Midland.
Okay.
And we had different people. We had people in sales and marketing behind the scenes, and yeah.
How does a military brat want to get into broadcasting?
Well, I mean, I heard that's the one thing. Like your little radio is your friend when you yeah. drive, move around.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But I honestly, Bob, I never thought about it until I was in grade 13, and my marks weren't great. My mom and dad sat me down.
Oh, said, welcome to radio, should, people.
Yeah, you probably should look, because I had grade 12, and he said, look, why don't you apply to community college, because you can get in with your grade 12 marks.
Yeah.
And I kept looking at the radio, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna get into radio. So you had to audition all that, and thank goodness Humber let me in. And I remember the first day, there's probably 65, 70 people, and they're going around and saying, you know, what's your experience in radio? And these people, like, I worked in my little town. I did it, and I got, Jim, I listen to radio. And everyone kind of looked at me. I've never been in a radio. I didn't even know what a microphone worked. And they're all saying they did this and this. I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
So you don't have that typical, like, I grew up listening to Tom Rivers and Mike Cooper and all that. Like, you, no. I mean, how long were you in Toronto for before you said you were up at Borden? So did you have that? Like, was Chum or are you like, I mean, you know, if you like just the legend of CFNY in the city and Q107, yeah. were those, did those stations resonate with you? Were you a music kid or like?
So I was music. So when we moved in the fall of 82
yeah.
to Camp Borden, I discovered Chum FM had a morning show called Rick Ringer.
Okay.
And he was great. So I would listen to him in the morning, driving around the car. I always listened to Mike Cooper in 680.
Yep.
Because it was stupid joke.
510 stupid joke of the day.
The 510 stupid joke. Like Mike Cooper, I got to know him later on in my career. And one of the great broadcasters of all time.
100%.
And then at night, I found at night when I was doing homework, when I should have been doing homework, I would listen to Q.
Yeah.
And they had like their top 10 of the week. And that's where I first heard Sister Christian from Night Ranger. I said, guys, I got the school. Like, instead of talking about my math homework, you should hear the Sister Christian Night Ranger. It's going to be awesome. You know, and which explains a lot of my academic failings. But I, to be honest with you, until I applied, I'm like, I had never really thought about it. But when I got into the program and started studying, I'm like, geez, I really want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, the business will test you a lot early yes. on
mm-hmm.
and to surviving the first 5 to 10 years is the most difficult thing. If you could survive the first 5 to 10 years and come out on the other side and make reasonable money, and then you're probably going to make it.
Did you, you talked about being a military, you know, being moving around as a military family could prepare you for broadcast, where often I don't find it as bad in Canada as is the States. You see a guy in the States who's like number one in Chicago. He was in Poughkeepsie and he was in Albany and he was in, you know, but Canada, you do move around, not quite as much. Where was your first gig? Where did you have to
It was at CKBB in Barrie.
Okay, so not too far.
It was an AM station, but it's now B101.
Yep.
So Randy Taylor did afternoons.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Don Landry did evenings. I did overnights.
Okay.
And then I was out of the business for a while, went back in the business, and then I was doing producing a queue. Then I worked in Montreal for 2 years.
Were you part of that crew that went with Derringer and Van, right?
It was just me and Derringer that went to Montreal.
Oh, okay.
So Craig was
right. I remember that. Yes.
So then I met Craig when we all moved back to work at the Fan.
Yes.
And that's when I started working with Craig and developed my friendship to this day with Craig and started working. And then I was at the Fan for a couple of years, and then I moved to 640.
Was sports always part of your life?
Oh yeah, but at the time, like there was no sports radio when I graduated.
No.
And sports TV was unthinkable because it was all guys 40 and over who had been in the business. Like, I was a punk kid.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as much as I wanted sports, back then you didn't get near a camera or microphone before the age of 25.
That's a good point.
It was almost unheard of. It took a while before they'd even now we'll let you do this. Okay, now we'll let you do that. Now you can do this. That was very common in the late 80s, early 90s, and your trajectory to on air. It took a long time, and they really wanted you to earn each step along the way.
Right.
But I love sports. So when the opportunity came to move back from Montreal to Toronto to work with Fan, all sports radio, I'm like, oh my God, this is great. And as soon as I landed there, that was it. I knew.
You said when you were in Humber, you know, once you started taking, you kind of took it on I'll do it, kind of appealed to you. When you got in there, I want to do this. Was there a moment in a radio station when you're like, I can do this? Like, did you know, did somebody tell you that you could do it? Or did you always just, because, you know, we have a problem in our industry, and I think probably in a lot of industries, but we live in a world where no news is good news. And you don't really hear a lot of positive feedback.
No, yeah.
You don't hear a lot of positive feedback. If you don't hear anything, then you're okay. But I, as a program director, which I've been for the last, 10 years or so, or more than that, but I really... because I know how much I thrive on feedback, and I need to know I want to know if I'm doing shitty, but I really want to know if you liked what I did. Man, the kids would call it I'm thirsty, I'm thirsty, man. Just give it to me. Tell me I'm good, please. Maybe that comes from working so many years with Humble and Fred.
That's a great question, Bob. Along the way, I would do certain things, and it kind of
okay.
I think I'm doing okay at that. Like, in turn, my inside voice.
Yeah.
And got a little bit of feedback. But, you realize, okay. But I always thought, I'm going to try a new challenge. So each new challenge, I'm not there yet. I need to work at this. And then,
right.
That kind of thing.
Yep.
So I've done this.
Yep.
That's great. And then I would be offered an opportunity to do something else. I'm like, well, I got to work at this. I got a long way to go. I, to be honest with you, I probably wasn't until my mid-30s, early 30s, early mid-30s before I really had that sort of self-confidence that I think I got to handle what I can do and what I'm capable of. I mean, it took a good 10 years. They can do it in a year. It took me longer.
Well, and also, as you know, we're this industry, they'll pull the carpet out from underneath your feet at any time. And I've had that done to me a couple times. Do you have I like to ask everybody in radio, do you have your first or your favorite I was let go story?
Well,
or are you one of the rarities that you actually haven't been? Have you walked into a room and seen the manila envelope?
Okay, it's happened in TV.
Oh, in TV. Okay. Yeah, in broadcast.
Yeah,
okay.
It happened in TV and radio. So it happened in TV. They did a restructuring at Sportsnet, which I didn't see coming.
Oh, that's the worst when you have no idea.
No, I had no idea.
Oh.
I had no idea.
How'd you deal with it? Well, how did it happen? How did it happen? How'd you deal with it?
I got called into a meeting and they had the envelope and said, we're going in a different direction. I went, uh-oh. And I was a wreck. I thought
did
I
you have
the
kids?
Family
did you
down.
Have a, yeah, I was going to say, do you have wife, kids, the whole bit?
So we took the kids out of school the next day. We went up to the cottage for a day. And I said, look, I've been doing this so long. Like, this is what I am. Like, I'm not going to, I told my wife, like, I'm not going to learn how to do something else. I'm going to figure it out. And I did. Like, I figured out, like, the next step. And then I was at the Fan for about 2.5 years. And by the end, I wasn't happy. They had brought in a U.S. consultant who wanted to turn us into Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith.
Yes. I remember those days. Like, you were doing mornings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Back,
yeah.
And when they offered me my package, I hugged my boss. I said, thanks.
Yeah.
I shook his hand, gave him a hug, and said, thank you.
How hard is that? How hard is that doing 2 years of when you know it just doesn't feel right?
But see, the weird thing is, Bob, the first year and a half, 2 years, it did feel
right. Oh, okay. Okay.
It felt fine. And then they brought the consultant in and they just did like turned it on the side thinking they could push it to the next level. And I thought it did the opposite. And since then they've been through like one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I don't know how many, but so when they gave me the envelope, I mean, I honestly, I hugged Don Collins and said, thank you. And I like, out. I mean, it was a completely different mindset than when I was in tears when I left Sportsnet, but I was like, I left the family. Like, here's my laptop and gave like.
And like I keys on the everything.
Yeah, no. And then the opportunity arose for 105.9 the region, and I've it's been such a blessing.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean it's such a funny industry. You know, we eat our own. We really don't do a very good job, generally speaking, in having people having these super long, like great longevity. However, what you're doing now, and at now I've been lucky enough to work for a couple independent broadcasters. I spent nearly 9 years with Rainbow Media Group, that was Evanov Radio Group, and then nearly 4 years with Durham Radio. So I I've done time. My other time is with Bell and Chorus. Those are my tours of duty. Couple with now my second one with Chorus. There are advantages and disadvantages to the small companies. But one of the advantages I find is you can be nimble, you can be quick, you can do things without really worrying about that corporate structure. My understanding, if I remember correctly, with the region, it was launched originally as a very unique station with block programming. And I think do you guys still have the block programming? And
we're English language from midnight to 6 p.m.
Right.
And we're Chinese language from 6 p.m. to midnight.
Wow.
And then we have ethnic programming early Saturday and Sunday morning. And then on our Saturday from 8 to noon, we have foreground programming, our talk block. We have a horse racing show. Ann Romer hosts a magazine show. We have a podcast show. And I remember those kind of shows on CFNY and Chum FM and Q in the 80s and 90s where they had these magazine shows and really, really long form interviews, and they got rid of them.
Well, they were conditions of license. Them.
Yes.
Did them because the CRTC made them do it, and then they dropped it. But remember the Rock Report and Live in Toronto, all that stuff, all gone. So now what you guys are doing is so unique.
And that's why I really enjoy doing it, and you get to talk to a wider variety of people.
Yeah.
And I still deal with sports in the morning. I write hockey books. So I get my sports fix.
Yeah.
But I like finding out and learning about charities and politicians and different things in the world, because there is more to this, just, hockey pucks and football.
Sure.
And especially as you get older, you're starting to open your, you realize how little the older you get.
Yo, absolutely.
And so you're like, oh yeah, like I'm learning more about this and this. So I like that.
Any man who knows a thing knows he knows not a damn thing at all. I firmly believe that, there's a great, I don't read a lot of those executive toughness books or whatever, but one of my favorite quotes is, strive to be the dumbest person in the room. Surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, because you will learn from them, right?
Well, I mean, I think what happened is, for me in the pandemic, a lot of people read a couple articles on the internet and went on social media like they were experts. I'm like, well, wait a second, you didn't go to medical school. These people.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh.
They've got PhDs and their doctorates, and they've been doing this for 30 years. Yeah. So...
I'm going to trust them. Yeah, exactly.
So,
I want
and that's the danger side to the internet, is people read an article or two and then start going on and on all night, texting 1,000 times or posting on social media. Like, I know the answer. No, you don't.
No, you do not. I wanted to go back to the sports thing for a second, because two or three of my favorite broadcast memories in my career were with you. I don't even know if you remember, but when we were at AM 640, when we were at Mojo Radio, I am a longtime Argonaut fan. I had season's tickets.
Yeah, I'm still
a huge fan. Yeah, I go to probably 4 or 5 games a year still, and whether they're good or bad. And I've always been a supporter of the team and the game, the CFL game. And I probably fell in love with them in 89. I can remember being about, I was 14 years old. And that's the year that Pinball broke the 3,300 years, right? 89, 90, in and around there. They moved to Skydome. I had been to Exhibition Stadium, but I was just a kid when I'd seen there. When they moved to Skydome, it was a cool place to go see it, because when that place had 35,000 plus, it was a good place to see a football game.
It was awesome.
It got a bad rap because when there's 11,000 people, it is cavernous and has no energy and no spirit. However, when I don't know how it came to be, whether it was you or maybe it was, I don't know if it was Scott Armstrong or Stu Myers, when it came out that I was a huge Argo fan, I went to the 96 Grey Cup by myself in Hamilton, stood in the snow. We talked about it. I ended up, you and me and Brian Warren hosted it was from the U of T campus. It was like a preseason.
It's a training camp.
Yes.
It was the family day.
Yes.
The fan day. Yes. The training camp. They had the mobile,
yes.
Like a cube van.
Yeah. Right? I would have been, Paul Gatt would have been the producer, the engineer. God, yeah. Remember Paul Gatt would have put that together.
Absolutely.
And you, me, and Brian Warren got to do that. And at that time, I'm like, maybe, so let's see. I'm not even 30 yet. I'm somewhere between 25 and 26, maybe. And getting to do, and I don't know whose idea it was, but it was amazing to be there and be a part of it and do it from the fans' point of view, with you as you were the broadcast guy who knew the proper way to do it. And Brian Warren was just learning to try to be a color guy at that point and learning. Yeah. And because he was doing the broadcast with you, but in my mind, and my dad came with me because it
That's
was
right. I remember.
Yeah. And it's one of my favorite memories is broadcast. So I just want to let you know that your high top five memories for me in radio, in broadcast, because it was just this amazing moment to think about this team that I had idolized for so long. I got to do something fun with it. So thank you. I don't know if you remember, but it was a lot of fun.
I do remember. I'm a big believer to this day that a broadcast like that, you need different layers of people and voices for the good of the broadcast.
Yeah.
So you need someone who's a young broadcaster who's a fan. Maybe you need a fan. Maybe you need a part of the team.
Yep.
Maybe you need a player.
Yep.
Because it's just the broadcaster. That's only one perspective. You need different dimensions of the story.
Yeah.
And plus, you know what it's like if you're doing it just yourself. It's so, but if you're
an hour long, I think it was an hour long special, maybe. Absolutely. And that's a lot of time to fill on a talk radio station. So having,
if you have different people to play off and different ways you can go. First of all, the hour's filled quickly.
Yeah.
And it's good radio, good broadcast, because you've got different voices and different perspectives on the same story.
And then the next season, I hosted a pregame show from down outside Skydome by myself. You were doing play-by-play. So
yes.
It was a half.
In 2002.
Okay, yep. Probably not very good teams those years, if I remember correctly. But
well, now that team, I'll tell you something.
That tell me about that team. What should I remember? Was that Kerwin Bell years? No.
Well, no. So no. Gary Echeverry was the coach.
Yeah, okay.
They fired him. Pinball took over. Mm. Reggie Slack became the starting quarterback. And they went all the way to the East Final.
That's right.
And I'll never forget. They're in the last game of the regular season, and I'll tell you what happened. They're playing Calgary, and Michael Fletcher, who grew up in Compton.
I remember Michael Fletcher, yeah.
He didn't give up on the play, came on a backside blitz, hit Marcus Crandall's right hand as he threw the ball. Antonius Bonner, who in the 18th game of the fourth quarter of the regular season got his first interception, goes for a touchdown. They tie the game. Noel Prefontaine kicks it in overtime. They win. They make the playoffs. Reggie Slack, they have the crossover. He beats the team that got rid of him, Saskatchewan. when he dives in for a touchdown to on the south end zone.
That's right.
And then they end up going to the East Final and losing to the Alouettes, who went on to win the Grey Cup. But yeah, I do remember it well.
Oh my gosh, that's you have. I mean, I guess when you're doing play by play, which do you remember? How do you get into like? I talked. I think you're the only other I had Mike Luck, who's now doing Sportsnet.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's
he does a really good job.
He's you know what? I love the fact I met him. It's Craig Venn and Lucky at 94.9 The Rock, and he's been doing those Generals games, those Oshawa Generals games for years on Rogers TV, and he finally got his break a couple years ago, and he's been doing Hockey Night in Canada, which I'm so happy for him. But the art of play by play. Like you'd said, you've done some OUA stuff. Was that? Did you do play by play on that, or were you like, what was your first play by play?
It was a McMaster Waterloo game.
Yeah,
and it was really good. There was Kojo Aidu was the running back for McMaster, and it was a really good game. Like good back and forth between Waterloo and McMaster. McMaster won, but so then I did some play by play there. And the thing with play-by-play I find is it takes a lot of repetition.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
I find way more repetition to get good at it than any other form of broadcasting because there's a lot going on. You're up high. How you're describing it, are you saying too much? Are you saying too little? Sometimes there's a pile-up, whatever the sport, you're trying to pick out numbers and things like that. And then I did some arena football.
The Phantoms?
The Toronto Phantom.
Yes.
So 640 had the radio rights, and I did the play-by-play, and Bruce Barker did the color.
Yes.
And then I did the Argos. And the first four or five games I did the Argos, quite frankly, it was average at best to below average. And then it got a little better. In the last five games of the season, it took time. Like, I started to understand the cadence, the nuances, understand things, and by the playoffs, and then the next years they had some money problems, and there was no radio broadcast, so it was whatever.
Was there anybody Was there anybody you looked to? Like, did you have was there somebody you could say, hey, like how do you prepare? What do you know what I mean? Like, I guess everybody prepares a different way, but did you have a mentor?
I would ask people. Well, not really. I mean, not specifically, Bob. I remember asking Chris Cuthbert.
Oh wow.
And some other people, some thoughts, but. Part of it is you would have like a half Bristol board and you'd write numbers and names and put little notes on it.
Yeah.
So if I saw Ouellette 43, I could glance down and go on his fourth touchdown of the game.
Right.
Because that's how you,
it's
like a cheat sheet because it's impossible.
I mean, on football especially. Oh my gosh. Like, I couldn't even imagine. You know who I think our friend Jeff Merrick would probably be good at play-by-play just because of his photographic memory when it comes to names and stats. Maybe be a better color guy. He's never done it, but
he'd be a better color guy. To be honest with you. Not that he wouldn't be play-by-play, but his ability to tell a story and is he would be a perfect color.
Oh my gosh! I always I'll text him randomly. I'll be with friends and I'll just be like, hey, who wants to know what high school the fourth line center on the Arizona? What you know what I mean? Like, and he'll be like, blah 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 blah. Like, you don't even need to go to the internet. I just need to text him because the way he remembers things, it's ridiculous. I could never do it. I'm always in awe of play by play. I love sports. I'm a huge sports guy, and literally my 3 years at Mojo was the closest I ever came to doing any sports radio. So I always like to pick people's brains on it. So right now, doing mornings at the region. Do you live in the region? Are you like you're?
I do. We've lived in Newmarket almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Our studios are in Markham and Vaughan.
Yeah.
And so I basically it's a 30-minute door to door. So
that's great.
Mean, that's why it's been so good. And we've been here a long. Our kids grew up here.
We didn't even really get into the whole life changes and getting married and having kids and whatnot. I tend to end up concentrating on broadcast because I'm a radio nerd. We're all radio nerds. But I'm really, really happy that you're doing well. You really are. I know I said it off the beginning. You really are one of the good guys in the industry. And I know we've really only, I think we run into each other like once at a golf tournament, but we haven't seen, but we see each other online and comment on each other's things. I consider you a friend. And I really appreciate you taking the time and talking about, some of the changes we've all gone through and what you've gone through specifically. Thanks so much, Jim.
To the award-winning Bob Ouellette, the pleasure was all mine.
Ah, thank you. I'm going to hit the extra here.
We got to stop making changes.
This has been Bob's Basement. Thanks for listening.
Things change. That's the way it is.
For more information,
email Bob at bobwillette@gmail.com. That's Bob Willette, like Gillette, with a W. Follow Bob on Twitter at Bob Willette. Bob's Basement is available where you find your favorite podcasts. Until next time.
Well, that's the way it is.